There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome along to the grill down here at Barasti. No Tom Urquhart today, but there is a Tom in the building. We'll reveal all in just a moment. We are building up to a busy day of live sport. It is the men's final of the Dubai Jury 3 Tennis Championships. Luca Puy, the Frenchman, will be taking on the Spaniard Roberto Batista Agut. We're building up to that one between now and 7. There's plenty of early kickoffs in the football. Burnley against Everton in the English Premier League. Celtic against Greenock Morton. Scottish Cup quarter-finals weekend up there in Scotland. Villarreal also in action against Girona. That one has just kicked off. We'll give you goal updates throughout the afternoon. In the cricket, day three of the first test in Durban, it is South Africa against Australia. New Zealand and England, the third ODI has wrapped up a little earlier today. We'll give you the full story of that. And in the Pakistan Super League, two matches to build up to this evening as well. We will do that. In the rugby, there's Super Rugby, there's the Viva Premiership Pro 14 and the Top 14 in France. And if all of that wasn't enough, there's a big story brewing over in Mexico. A young 21-year-old Indian, the youngest man in the field, leads at the halfway stage. You are listening to The Grill. We're live from Barasti from now until 7 o'clock.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
A warm welcome then to our little broadcast down here. Beautiful, beautiful day down in Barasti. If the weather yesterday was terrible, it is the very contrast of that today. The sun is out and I'm delighted to say that I've put together the A-team, the dream team this afternoon. Alongside me is Mark Archer, everyone's favourite Kiwi, after, or second favourite after Dan Carter, I think. Mark Archer, very good afternoon.
Afternoon, Chris. Afternoon, listeners. Yeah, and I guess it's a funny old afternoon in cricket and in rugby across the globe. No Six Nations rugby this weekend, as Scottish fans are still recovering from last weekend's victory over England at Murrayfield. But there is plenty of domestic rugby to talk about in both the northern and southern hemispheres. International cricket, I guess the focus is really on Durban. Big test match series between the Proteas and the Baggy Greens, and it's Australia going into day three in a pretty strong position against South Africa over in Durban. And then again, a wonderfully even ODI match earlier today in Wellington, New Zealand. It was the third ODI with New Zealand taking on England. Close match to bring you the scores a little bit later.
Absolutely, the voice there of Mark Archer. He is with us throughout proceedings this afternoon, and alongside Mark Archer, no Tom Urquhart today. He is busy at the Emirates Lit Fest. He is a busy man, is Tom Urquhart. But there is a Tom in our midst, a familiar voice to Dubai Eye listeners. It is, of course, our good friend Tom Bushaw. Very good afternoon to you, Tommy.
Good afternoon to you. Good afternoon to you as well, Chris McCarty. How are you?
Very well, Tom. Very well indeed. We'll make sure that mic is on.
That would be nice.
There we go. I think you're on now.
Lovely.
We've not turned you on this afternoon. There you are. You're here.
I am here, yeah. It's a pleasure to be here. And what a day as well. The last couple of days down at the Aviation Club and a few clouds. I brought a bit of the British weather over for us. But today I've seemed to have made it go away. It's glorious down here today.
It is. It's an absolute belting spot. And a reminder as well, 25% off selected beverages. So if you are looking for a venue to watch all your sport, then please, please do get on down to Barasti. The early kickoff in the Premier League, it is Burnley against Everton. We'll have team news on that one in just a moment. The late kickoff, and this will pique your interest,
yes,
Mr. Bushell. It is your beloved Newcastle United in action.
It is indeed, absolutely. As you say, the early kickoff, Burnley, Everton, which does go ahead despite the weather conditions in the UK at the moment, but that is confirmed to go ahead at 4:30 this afternoon. Burnley, Everton. But also, we'll see, and I'll keep you updated just in case any of these games are cancelled, but Leicester City, Bournemouth are scheduled to go ahead, Southampton, Stoke City, Swansea, West Ham United, Tottenham, Huddersfield Town, Watford, West Bromwich Albion, and then the late kickoff, Liverpool against Newcastle United. They may as well call that one off and just give the 3 points to Newcastle United, but I will keep you updated if there's any news on any call-offs there during the course of the afternoon, because the weather in the UK at the moment is horrendous. And as you also touched on, of course, there's football in Spain, of course, going on. Villarreal and Girona currently 9 minutes in there and still 0-0 in La Liga. And then also, of course, in Scotland as well, Scottish Cup action. So I'll keep you updated on all of that. And of course the final of the tennis later on this afternoon or this evening as well to look forward to.
Yes, too. Robbie Greenfield, Paul Espy will be calling all of the action down there at the Aviation Club from 7 p.m. So Tommy is keeping an eye on all the football, a lot of football stories and a lot of early kickoffs to keep you across. Mark Archer, well, I was going to say you're going to be keeping a close eye on the Six Nations. No Six Nations action this weekend. Explain that one to me. They have 2 weeks off, they then produce a barnstorming weekend of rugby action, and then they go back into cold storage for another 2 weeks. That just does not make sense to me.
Well, I guess it's the way it's always happened over in the UK. I think they played two rounds, and then they had a week off, and then they played another round, another week off, and then they played the final two rounds over the next 2 weekends. But hasn't it bubbled up to a nice competition now with 2 weeks, you know, two rounds to go? I guess the big upset last week, Scotland winning for the first time in a decade against England. And I think, you know, in some ways, you've got to give some credit to England. It was 26 matches that Eddie Jones has played. It's only their second defeat. But Scotland had found, had been growing good, having some great momentum over the last sort of couple of seasons, and it was probably the best result they have had as a team. Threatened against the All Blacks at Murrayfield in the November internationals, probably could have almost snuck a win there, the first win ever against the All Blacks. Didn't quite get there, but this win, as many would Scots would claim, has been a long time coming. And great to see Scottish rugby, you know, well coached, well drilled, and really give a bit of a thrashing to England last weekend. And in some ways, you know, it's only just over a year now to a Rugby World Cup, 18 months. And Eddie Jones, it's probably not a bad time to have a bit of a slip-up. It's going to really give him a real indication of the players and tactics-wise what England will want to do moving forward, you know, with that World Cup in mind. England were badly outplayed, outcoached by Gregor Townsend, Scotland, and a great day to be a Scottish rugby fan.
I know an awful lot has been said, certainly on this show, over the course of the past 6 months, building up to that monster clash at Twickenham in November between England and the All Blacks. Can anyone else win the World Cup? We've had a lot of texts in on Sports Tonight this week asking, can Ireland go and do it? Can Scotland put together a team that could challenge for World Cup honours? In your opinion, Arch, can they?
It'll depend on a number of things. The biggest thing regarding probably those two teams you mentioned there, England and New Zealand on the one hand are going to go into the event, even though it's still 18 months away, as probably the two favourite teams. The teams you just said about, the other Northern Hemisphere teams, Ireland and Scotland. The biggest thing going into World Cup is depth of players, because you will suffer injuries, you will have some guys dip in form, and if you haven't got adequate cover throughout a World Cup campaign where you have to win, I think, best part of 7 or 8 matches in a row to win a World Cup, that's where those teams have fallen short in the past. You've got to remember, last World Cup over in the UK, 4 Southern Hemisphere teams made the semi-finals. No England, no Ireland, no Scotland, no Wales. They were none to be seen come semi-final time. So I think Ireland's done a great job building depth, and they've had some turnover of players in recent years. The big question mark I'd ask about Scotland, though, is if they have 3 or 4 injuries and they lose some key players, do they have the depth to cover them? Because you can't win a World Cup now with a squad of 23. You need the big squad, not the match day 23, the starting 15. You need to have depth of cover. We know the All Blacks have got plenty of depth of cover. We know England have got lots of depth of cover as well. That would be the biggest question mark. But on their day, Ireland and Scotland have shown that they're the match for the big boys now, that they're right up there in those top echelons, that top tier of rugby. It's been a massive improvement for Scotland in the last 2 years. The coaching system has been good. Vern Cotter's moved on. Gregor Townsend's come in and seemed to have elevated them to a slightly different level. And tactically, they got it right last week when Eddie Jones is usually so good tactically and has the guys playing such an efficient way. But England have got to be a little bit worried, because they've nipped a couple of results on early in the championship without playing that well. Big test for them next weekend. They've got to go to Paris and take on France, which won't be an easy match. But it's well poised, the Six Nations. I think until 1 year out from the Rugby World Cup, I think teams will really start to gear up their teams. But teams, they're really trying to get their selections sorted now. And the other thing I would say about winning a Rugby World Cup, you need to have lots of caps. The All Blacks have shown that the last two times around, 900,000 caps within that team. That's the biggest thing for Ireland and Scotland, and even England to a degree, need to get experienced players in their positions with the right combinations. That's what's been proven success at World Cups.
Tommy, you call London home. The UK is home now for you. That defeat to England, and I've got to say, Scotland, I thought, thoroughly deserved it. It wasn't a fluke last week. They dominated for much of that match. What was the press like down in London after that defeat for Eddie Jones?
Well, I think following on from what Archer's just been saying, I think it's a wake-up call, isn't it, a year out from a Rugby World Cup. And I think if it's a blessing in disguise, it's maybe what they needed to realise there is work to do if they want to really contend in the next Rugby World Cup in Japan in next summer. Of course, having had that disappointment of the home World Cup just 3 years ago, I think it's a wake-up call and exactly what they needed. They went into that game very confident and almost underestimated Scotland. Very confident from the players and from Eddie Jones himself. And they were they were showing up, weren't they? At the end of it, they didn't compete as well as Scotland, and they made mistakes, and that's something they're going to have to cut out.
We often say that winning ugly is a hallmark of a champion. I made this point off air last week. There was a few England fans in watching that match, and there comes a point where, yes, winning ugly is good. It is the hallmark of champions. You don't win titles, you don't win trophies unless you can win ugly. That being said, at what point does it become a worry for Eddie Jones that it's always winning ugly? Because that's an issue for me. If you start looking as if you're not convincing enough and you're just getting over the finish line, that becomes a terminal issue, because normally that should be the exception, not the rule. And in the case of England, I can't recall. I mean, Arch, I know you watch a lot of rugby. When was the last time England really convinced
dominated.
You that they could go toe-to-toe with the All Blacks?
If you're talking about England winning a Rugby World Cup, you're not going to beat the All Blacks winning ugly. You're not going to scrape a win against them. You're going to have to be at the best game. All your players are going to have to play at their peak. Tactically, you're going to have to get it perfect to win a World Cup in a final against a team like the All Blacks. And that's what Eddie Jones has to overcome now. He had it pretty much his own way for a long period of time. And the biggest criticism of Eddie Jones throughout his coaching career, not in England because he's gone 26 matches, only lost two, is that his tactics, his internal motivation start to become stale. It's happened with the Brumbies. Yeah. It's happened with Australia. It's happened a bit with Japan. And that's always been the criticism of Eddie Jones, who's a great character. He's great for rugby. He's been great for English rugby. But the worrying thing now as an English rugby fan is you're 18 months away from a Rugby World Cup. Has the team started to doubt its tactics?
You're saying, Arch, is he's the Jose Mourinho of the rugby world.
Well, Jose Mourinho has had a lot of success for a long period of time, and maybe that criticism can be levelled at Jose Mourinho right now. But England have depth of players. They have the largest financial resources. They have a massively strong competition in the Viva Premiership, the strongest competition in Europe. And they're going to be a heck of a competitor come Rugby World Cup time. But they're going to have to find some ways. What's been disappointing about them is they haven't scored many tries. They've got a great dominant forward pack. They've got a very good fly half or inside centre, Owen Farrell. They're good at kicking their goals, but they haven't looked that creative. The back line doesn't look as though there's a lot of X factor there. They've got some great players individually, but as a team, are they really creating opportunities with the back line? That's the question marks really you've got to be answered by Eddie Jones. But two massive weeks for them. For England, really, because they could, in theory, lose both these matches coming up. Going to Paris to take on France, who have been very disappointing, but have shown some potential, are due a big match. That's in La Crunch next weekend. And then that final match that we all talked about, even at the start of Six Nations, Ireland hosting Ireland at Twickenham on Paddy's Day. Oh. A massive challenge for both those teams. So England rugby, really, two massive weeks coming up for Eddie Jones's regime.
Yeah, absolutely. Six Nations it's not on this weekend, unfortunately. I'm still scratching my head over that one. That is all next week. We'll park that chat. There is plenty of rugby to discuss. There are some matches ongoing, but we are building up to the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It is a match that Tommy B is going to be keeping a close eye on. Burnley, who have once again under Sean Dyche, what a season they have had. They are the best of the rest in many respects, currently sitting seventh behind Arsenal. It is remarkable the season Burnley have had. Yep. Against an Everton team, Tom, that will flatter to deceive. Once again, Ronald Koeman's face didn't fit. They wanted Marcus Silva. He wasn't leaving Watford, or at least Watford weren't allowing the Portuguese boss to leave, and they've ended up with Big Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, I mean, Marco Silva didn't come out well, did he, in the whole Everton affair, really, because he didn't decide, but Watford, of course, didn't allow him to go, and then sacked him saying, well, you clearly don't want to be here anymore, so off you go. So Marco Silva, I'm sure he'll turn up in the Premier League once again at some point in the near future, because he proved himself to be more than capable of managing a Premier League side. But that's right, early kickoff in the Premier League this afternoon is that of Everton and Burnley. And as you say, Chris, well, Burnley, what a fantastic season they've been having. 37 points from 28 games, and they're just, Arsenal on 45 points there, 8 points behind Arsenal. goal for Burnley. If you said that at the start of the season, come March, would you mind being 8 points behind Arsenal? They probably thought they would have been third or fourth. But no, they're seventh, but they're having a remarkable season, aren't they? I mean, it's so interesting, though, in the Premier League. Below Burnley, it just gets ever so tight. Really, up and Everton could even be dragged into that relegation zone. But realistically, you're looking at Watford and Bournemouth behind them, aren't you? But Everton, well, they, you know, Sam Allardyce, I don't think he was a fan favourite, was he, when he joined Everton? He's certainly done well in terms of getting them out of trouble, because they started the season really badly. But they're doing okay now. They're not going to be relegated. And it should be a good game, to be fair. Two evenly matched teams. And we'll wait and see how this one progresses. But yeah, half four kickoff in 10 minutes.
Yeah, looking forward to it. We'll give you team news when we come back. Incidentally, just a quick word on Everton. I am hearing from some reliable sources that Sam Allardyce won't be there next season. He will be given his P45 once again in the summer, and Everton will go down yet another direction. Paul Gascoigne, nice to see him looking healthy. He was a visitor to the Everton training ground at Finch Farm this past week.
He's doing a bit of a tour, because I was covering a Rangers game a couple of weeks ago and he was there as well.
He's seen some old friends.
He's got a book to sell or something.
Not that I'm aware of, Tommy. I think Paul is just taking the opportunity to go and visit some old friends, perhaps in the hope that their job is there or something. But he is looking well, and it is, all jokes aside, nice to see Paul looking so well. He's got, of course, well-documented issues, does Paul Gascoigne, an absolute legend of English football, and he's having a laugh and a giggle with Wayne Rooney this past week at the Finch Farm. We will give you team news when we come back. That is the early kickoff, Burnley against Everton. We expect goals in this one, in fairness. Not often that the early kickoffs in the Premier League let us down from goals. Tom will have the team news when we come back. We're also going to talk about a young Indian who is doing some wonderful things over in Mexico at the WGC Mexico Championship. 21 years of age, he is the youngest man in the field, and he leads at the halfway point. More on that when we come back.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Welcome back to the show down here at Barasti. It is Chris, Tom and Mark Archer with you all the way through until 7 o'clock. We will then be live to the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships. Robbie Greenfield will be standing by with Paul Espy. They will be calling all of the action. It is the final, the men's final this evening, between the second seed Luca Puy of France taking on the third seed Roberto Batista Agut. All of that to come. Before that though, let's get team news on this early kickoff in the Premier League. It is Burnley against Everton, and Tommy B's all over.
Absolutely. I'll let you know the starting 11s, and then I'll let you know a little fact about Burnley, which may surprise you, considering they are seventh in the Premier League. But the starting 11 for Burnley: Pope in goal, Loughton, Tarkowski, Mee and Ward, Lennon, Cork, Westwood, Berg, Munkson, Henrik and Barnes for Burnley for them today. And then for Everton, Pickford, Coleman, Keane, Williams, Martina, Walcott, Guy, Davis, Sigerson and Calvert-Lewin, plus Tosin as well. What's remarkable about Burnley? They are seventh in the Premier League, 37 points and 28 played. They're on the toes of Arsenal, a little further back from Chelsea, but essentially away from the top four and five there. They are in amongst it. But Burnley in the Premier League have not one for 12 weeks, which is remarkable and shows you how great they were at the start of the season, and perhaps have gone off the boil, but it just shows you again how competitive the Premier League is.
It certainly does. Wayne Rooney left on the bench for Everton this afternoon. As I said a little earlier, he was meeting up with Paul Gascoigne this past week, and Tommy mentioned that Burnley are on the heels of Arsenal. Down in sixth are Arsenal. The problems, the crisis that has engulfed Emirates Stadium, well, it continues. We will be joined, just worth marking your card, Mikel Silvestri will be with us on Monday night for Monday Night Football. He's returning from his little work trip. We're also going to be joined by Robbie. Yes, that's Robbie, not Greenfield. Robbie of Arsenal Fan TV fame. So if you love your Arsenal, if you want to hear a very passionate fan have his say in all things Arsenal and Arsene Wenger, then make sure to tune in to Monday Night Football from 7 p.m. So that is the early kickoff. Up in Scotland as well, Tommy, Celtic in action. Remarkable to think that they've only lost two domestic games since Brendan Rodgers took charge at that
football club. Well, it's a crisis, isn't it? Because it's two games in quite quick succession, really.
That is a crisis up at Celtic Football Club.
It certainly is. No, absolutely. I mean, it's a remarkable domestic run of form, isn't it? I think I get the impression a lot of Celtic fans aren't particularly happy of how they're going in Europe, however, which is always the problem with Celtic and Scottish clubs in general. But domestically, they are in stunning form. And once again, of course, we'll have no problems sweeping the board across Scottish football.
You'd think so this afternoon as well. You expect a pretty routine afternoon for Celtic. They are taking on Greenock Morton, that the first of four quarter-final matches this weekend. Aberdeen in action against Kilmarnock, 7 p.m. So that's the Scottish Cup, put you up to date with. We will give you team news of Celtic, or at least we'll keep you up to date if any goals are scored in that 4:30 kickoff up in Scotland. For now, though, we want to talk about golf. Robbie Greenfield will be happy with that. But it's a story that is, well, it's transcending the sport a little bit. I appreciate Mark Archer. We're only at the halfway stage of the WGC Mexico Championship over there in Mexico, but it is a young Indian who is setting the early pace.
Yeah, amazing story emerging out of Mexico. It's the first WGC World Golf Championship event of 2018. $10 million event, massive prize money available, lots of world ranking points because it tends to, these events tend to track the best players in the world. And the surprise leader after two rounds is the young Indian player, youngest player in the field, and a man I haven't heard a lot of, Shubhankar Sharma, who's 11 under par, rounds of 65 and 66, which gives him a two-shot lead at the halfway mark of the first WGC Championship, the Mexican Championship. There, amazing story really emerging. Tied for second is the American Xander Schauffele at 9 under par with two Spanish players, Rafa Cabrera-Bella, who spent a lot of time in Dubai, and Sergio Garcia, the Masters champion. So it's a star-studded field, but the man at the lead is Shubhankar Sharma. Let's listen to his post-round interview yesterday after he shot 66.
Sharma leading the Asia Tour order of merit. He's leading the European Tour's race to Dubai standings. And Shubhankar, you're now leading the WGC Mexico Championship, at least at this moment. Let's talk about today. What were your strengths out there?
I think I just kept the ball in play all throughout the day. You know, the only two bogeys that I made today were three putts. So, you know, just kept the ball in the fairway today and gave myself as many chances, you know, to attack the pin as possible.
You said after your 65 yesterday, you felt comfortable heading into round number two. And boy, you showed that on the very first tee shot. Here, number one, the par four.
Yeah, I mean, the wind was straight into me. And just like yesterday, I knew I had to hit a great three wood to get it, you know, anywhere close to green. And just flushed it. Came out with a five-yard draw and never left the pin.
Made eagle there. You went bogey after that, but then caught fire on the back nine. This birdie on 18 for 31.
Yeah, but this part was, you know, it was a double breaker, slightly from the left and then in the end from the right. So, you know, I just picked a spot and hit it right over it, and thankfully it went in.
When we spoke earlier this week, you said you're here with humble confidence being a part of this elite field. Some may be surprised that you're leading right now. Do you feel like you've exceeded expectations so far, or are you playing as expected?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't really put any pressure on myself before I came here, and you know, I expected to play well. I was playing well this season, and you know, just I'm really happy that I'm playing at such a high level and playing with all of these great players. So, you know, I try to enjoy myself as much as possible out there, and you know, this is the best position I could have been in.
Finally, of course, we have two more rounds to go in this championship, but what do you feel like you've proven to yourself and maybe the golf world so far?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely proven to myself that I belong here and that, you know, I can play with the big boys. And, you know, just will try and do the same what I've done in the past 2 days at the next two.
Shubhankar Sharma there certainly can play with the big boys, 21 years of age. I appreciate we're only at the halfway stage of this WGC Championship, but he does lead by two shots.
Yeah, and I tell you what, he's having a great season as well. The Joburg Open back in December, he won that and grabbed himself €161,000 in the process. 23 under, he won that tournament. He then played here in Abu Dhabi at the HSBC Championship, and he was tied for 48th there, and then the Dubai Desert Classic tied for 61st. That's still got him €6,000, however. I reckon I could tie 61st at the Desert Classic and get €6,000. But, I mean, and then after the Desert Classic, he wins again at the Maybank Championship, €400,000 in the bank. So in terms of a season, he touched on it there, he's playing well. Two wins so far in this current European Tour season. He is in phenomenal form. And I tell you what, halfway mark, obviously moving day tomorrow, but he's up there.
Yeah, it's fair to say, look, he's one of the form players in world golf. Two wins in the last sort of 2 months. He heads the race to Dubai 2018 season at the moment, ahead of Tommy Fleetwood, who defended in Abu Dhabi a few weeks ago, ahead of Roy McIlroy. So it's a star-studded European Tour field that he heads up that race to Dubai. And look, this event is the big players. $10 million he's playing for would be the biggest purse that this young player has played for before. And just to run down the leaderboard and give you some notable other players of the type of calibre are in this event. So we talked about the guys tied for second, but tied for fifth at 7 under par. He's got a 4-shot lead on those players. Louis Oosterhuizen, who's won majors, of course. Pat Perez, who was in Dubai recently. Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, and Kiradek Apibana at 7 under par. Notable others, though, Phil Mickelson, 5 under par. Ricky Fowler and John Ram, 4 under par. Matt Fitzpatrick, 2 under par. Charles Schwartzel, 2 under par. Justin Thomas, who won last week in a playoff at 2 under par. Justin Rose at 1 over, and Tommy Fleetwood at 1 over. So it is the who's who of world golf pretty much playing this first WGC, and it's a young Indian man, Shubhankar Sharma, at 11 under par, who leads the field after two rounds.
Yeah, Joy Chakravarti will be joining us at 5:45. He is a man very much with his finger on the pulse when it comes to Asian golf, Indian golf in particular. And I'm just thinking as well, when you throw in the mix Aditi Ashok, who won the Fatima Bint Mubarak Ladies Open back in November, 19-year-old Indian woman, then you just have to say that Indian golf right now is getting a shot in the arm. It is exciting times,
yeah,
if you're an Indian golf fan.
Absolutely, and also the facilities are around as well. If you think a lot of them are based here in Dubai, with the facilities on offer to practice all year round as well, then it's in that sense it's no surprise. Yeah, absolutely, you're right. They're taking the world by storm at the moment.
Absolutely, they are. We'll keep an eye on that story. As I say, Joy will be with us at 5:45 to have a little chat about that. When we come back, though, we're going to turn our attention to the world of cricket. We'll keep an eye on the football as well, because any early goals in that early kickoff between Burnley and Everton, we will bring you them. But an awful lot going on in the world of cricket. You've got the Pakistan Super League here, you've got day 3 of the opening test between South Africa and Australia down in Durban, and there's been a result between the Kiwis and the English boys. We'll tell you about that when we come back.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
We are down here on the rooftop of Barasti. Beautiful spot to spend an afternoon. If you are looking for a little spot to watch all your sporting needs, then do pop on down. Say hello to us as well. We do not bite. We will get you on the show if you've got a decent little viewpoint that you want to share with us. Tom Bushell, Mark Archer alongside myself, Chris McCarty, this afternoon. And Tom is keeping an eye on the early kickoff in the Premier League. Early stages, Tom, put us in the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, very early stages, inside 6 minutes. And Burnley 0, Everton 0 at the moment. Pretty even at the moment. But I'll keep you updated as we get along with the afternoon.
Yes, we will indeed. Just a little half chance there from Burnley, raiding down the right-hand side. Yeah, I think it was Gudmundsson as well, the Icelandic international down there. But came to nothing. Burnley 0, Everton 0. We're going to talk cricket now, if we can. The Pakistan Super League, which has been an absolute belter so far this season. We had Paul Radley from The National joining us midweek. He was talking up the fact that Karachi Kings have looked good. There's a couple of new stars that have emerged as well. A couple of matches to get underway, or at least one is underway. One to come a little later today. Mark Archer's across it.
Yeah, we have two matches today in the Pakistan Super League. It's match 14. Both matches today are being hosted down at Sharjah. It's the first match of today is Quetta Gladiators versus the Multan Sultans. Bit of a mouthful there. The Multan Sultans won the toss, elected to field first. So Quetta are 92 for 5 after 13 of their 20 overs. Safriz Ahmed, 26, not out. Mohammad Nawaz yet to score. So 92 for 5. The second match later today is Peshawar versus Lahore. So it's a doubleheader down in Sharjah. We'll bring you all the runs and wickets as they happen.
We certainly will. The other match, or two matches, one that has concluded, one that is ongoing, and it's one that is certainly catching our eye here. It is down in Durban between the Proteas and the Baggy Green. South Africa against Australia. Day 3 of the opening test. And it's fair to say, Archie, that the Aussie boys dominating this one.
Yeah, the Aussies firmly in control going into day 3. And they've, their dominance has been stamped home in the first session earlier today. Just to give you a bit of a wrap so far for the first 2 days, Australia batted first, 351 they scored. Mitchell Marsh, the all-rounder, top score with 96. 50 is also to David Warner and their captain, Steve Smith. In reply, the Proteas were dismissed yesterday for a disappointing 162. Lone resistance from AB de Villiers with 71 not out. Mitchell Stark was magnificent yesterday, the left arm quick. He took 5 for 34, chipped in the off-spin of Nathan Lyon, who also got 3 for 50. So at stumps yesterday, Australia took a lead of 189 runs, a very dominant lead into the final 3 days, and that's been banged home in the first couple of sessions today. They're 173 for 5, which gives them a lead of 362, which is probably plenty runs enough, but they've got 5 wickets remaining. Wickets to 4 for Australia in their second innings. Bancroft for 53, Warner for 28, Khawaja 6, Steve Smith 38, and Mitchell Marsh the last to go for 6. Not out is Sean Marsh, Marsh on 24. Tim Payne, the wicketkeeper, is 13 not out. So Australia, 173 for 5, but a big lead they have over the South Africans with only really just into the 2 days remaining of this test match. They're in a dominant position here. 362 runs is the lead. One man, though, that provided the resistance yesterday was A.B. de Villiers. This is what he had to say after his innings, after the day's conclusion yesterday, with South Africa dismissed for 162.
I'm not sure exactly what I did differently to the other guys. I just felt really good leading up to this test match in the nets. Did some really good things in the nets, and I felt confident going into the test. You don't always feel that way when you play test cricket, so I just felt really confident at the wicket from the word go today, and I was very motivated to score some runs for the boys. And yeah, unfortunately not enough partnerships. I think that's the key in our downfall as a batting unit today. There were just no real good partnerships that absorbed the pressure enough, and that's why we came up short. Yeah, that's difficult to say. I think a bit of both. I think there were a couple of softies today, but also some really good bowling. They had a really good intensity about them, and they seemed to be clear about with their plans, and I think we could feel that as a batting unit, that they know what they're doing out there. But yeah, it's not all lost. I mean, some guys looked really good, but just didn't convert. And like I said, it was really close to a couple of good partnerships. We just didn't cross that line today. I mean, if you cross that line with two batters out there, things change very quickly. Unfortunately, that didn't happen today. But there's small margins in this game, so I'm not going to delve into too deep. I think we came up just short. Good bowling, some loose shots here and there, but all in all, not far off. Yeah, that's sport for you. We're honestly not far off, but the deficit looks really bad. I think the wicket is getting a little bit harder by the day, and that's a bit of a problem. But in saying that, it won't be easy for them to bat out there tomorrow. It's just up to us to make sure that we have the right game plans in place, and with some good intensity and aggression, we can really pull off something special. We still have that belief. There's no doubt about it. We've done it against this team before a few times. So bad position, yes, but we're not out of it.
That was the South African batsman, A.B. de Villiers, who scored 71 not out yesterday. Lone resistance in the South African total of 162. Australia with a big lead. One man who has a comment, and a fair comment, on both teams is Kepler Wessels, former South African captain, also played for Australia at Test cricket. This is what he had to say after day two of the Test match in Durban.
The end of day two here at Kingsmead. What a spectacular final. Well, 20 minutes, wasn't it really? 5 for 12 in the space of 7 overs. Mitchell Starc, some superb reverse swing.
Well, he did. He blew South Africa away. He got 5 for 12. And once the ball started to reverse, particularly after they changed the ball and the ball was a bit harder and they got extra bounce with that reverse swing, he was just too good for that South African middle order. And then if he was too good for the middle order, he was always going to be too good for the tail. So he was absolutely brilliant, Mitchell Starc. But let's not forget Nathan Lyon. He started it off today. He bowled really well, got those first two early wickets. But I think overall, from Australia's point of view today, it was an excellent performance with the ball and in the field too.
Yeah, dealing with the Mitchell Starc reverse swing, few players in the world are as accurate as him when he's got the ball darting around away from the right hander, back towards the stumps. He's the complete package.
Well, he is, and he comes wide of the crease and then angles it into the right hander and takes it away. So it becomes very difficult knowing which deliveries to let go and which ones to play at. So he was just simply too good for the South African batsman today, and they're going to have to find a counter to try and work through this during the series, because it won't be the only time that it's going to happen.
You mentioned Nathan Lyon, 3 wickets today, taking it past Craig McDermott. So he's the 6th most amount of wickets for Australia in test cricket now. 2 in that first over, the classic bat pad with Amla as well. How far has Nathan Lyon came since the last time you saw him play against South Africa?
Oh, I think he bowled well against South Africa before on the last tour when South Africa beat Australia in Australia. He was good, he was steady, but he really has improved a lot since then. And I just thought today his dismissal when he got Ashimama out was brilliant bowling. He got it to turn back into him. Ashimama, normally a really good player of spin, but I think also Ashimama was setting himself up for a battle with Josh Hazlewood, because Josh Hazlewood has got him out a lot of times before, so I think he really was focused on that. So a bit of a surprise to him, I think, too, to have to face Nathan Lyon so early on in the innings, but a big blow for South Africa, that one.
And poor old A.B. de Villiers, turning the clock back, batting beautifully, left at the non-strikers end watching the carnage.
He was hugely impressive today, because he got a hostile reception from Australia when he came into bat, and I think in a way it worked in his favour, because he really knuckled down, he focused, he was motivated, he concentrated, and the way he constructed his innings innings was excellent. His shot selection was good, and he was at his best today. He made it look as if he was batting on a totally different surface against a different attack.
And Kepler, what did you make of the stump mic subplot, if you like, through the course of the day? Did you hear much of the chat on the commentary through the headphones?
Yeah, look, for me, it's very familiar having played for Australia, so I know how it all goes, and I know who they target and how they target players, so I was very amused. Alan Border and myself were on air at the time, and we were just having a giggle because it's all so familiar, it comes back to you. But yeah, it was all happening, and it was happening for most of the day.
Australia did pretty well to get to 351, considering none of their partnerships totaled more than 60, principally due to Mitchell Marsh, fell four runs short of a century. But again, what an improved player and what a fine hand.
Absolutely, those 200s he got against England in the Ashes has just given him the confidence. He really looks now like a number six batsman for Australia, and then you can add his bowling. He wasn't used today, but you can add his bowling into that as well. So he's the package that Australia need to balance up their side, and I thought he played superbly. He was patient, he constructed his innings well, his shot selection was good, he played the ball on its merits. Just a pity he missed out on that 100, it was richly deserved, but I guess he gave it up for the team.
Both first innings completed. Australia all out 351, South Africa all out 162. We come back for day three tomorrow with Australia in a commanding position.
And they remain in a commanding position, do Australia. That was the thoughts there of the former Proteus captain, Kepler Wessels. Good insight that from that man there. We will be keeping a close eye on the closing stages of day three. It is Australia very much, though, in command. You were saying a little earlier off air, Arch, they've impressed you with what you've seen of them.
Yeah, they've been good. They've been super aggressive. They've come out and had really good game plans. And the big difference between the two teams, when you've got Mitchell Stark bowling at over 150 kilometres, left arm wide of the crease, he's getting a little bit of movement off the pitch. He was almost unplayable yesterday in his second spell with the reverse swing. He took 5 for 34. Nathan Lyon came on earlier with his off spin, picked up a couple of wickets, and the big difference is I think it just looks like the Australian bowlers look more likely to bowl South Africa out twice than the other way around. But it's a fascinating competition, two teams packed with fast bowlers. But it looks as though really Australia have the upper hand. But this is going to be a closely fought series, four test match series. The first one looks like Australia firmly in control, should win this match if the weather doesn't intervene, and will take a 1-0 lead into the final three matches. But really, really old school hard cricket. Interesting tactic by the Australians is they've been complaining a lot about the on-field mics, and obviously they've come out and targeted a few of the South Africans with some verbal aggression, as most good Australian teams
there.
Do.
Yep.
And what's happened is they've asked for the mics to be turned down between deliveries, but the ICC and the local guys haven't done that. So what they've done is they started talking about all their team sponsors on mic. So they're talking about Qantas, and they're talking about verbally basically making a bit of a point that if you don't turn it down, we're going to do a bunch of ambush marketing during play. So it's been quite a talking point off the field. But they've been very, very aggressive. I mean, AB de Villiers came in for a load of stick for a guy that's got 10,000 test runs. But he was magnificent. He was the one lone resistance, looked world class. It's a shame that he's not going to be playing too much more test cricket going forward. But he was unbelievable. But Mitchell Stark and the Australian seam bowlers were really strong yesterday.
Yeah, and the big news, of course, before this matchup, that Morne Morkel will retire from all forms after the conclusion of this series. Be interested to get both your boys' views on that, actually. The mic stump, good for cricket?
Do you know what? Technology and sport, yes, I'm a fan, apart from VAR.
Apart from VAR, yes. VAR, I think, does have a place in football. It just needs to be a proper system that works
for
all.
It needs to be, for matter of a fact, decisions.
Absolutely.
That's all that it needs to be.
Absolutely.
Let's not get into that now.
It was a conversation we had on Sports Tonight. Let us know your thoughts, 4001 on VAR. But fan of the mic stump?
Look, I think it's a good thing. You know, cricket, it's a very emotional sport, and you need to be aggressive if you're a bowler and if you're a fielding team at times. And look, you know, cricket's a sport throughout history that guys have been verbally targeted. Sometimes teams and bowlers have taken it too far. And if you've got children and families watching test cricket, it can be a bit excessive. I mean,
I'll tell you what then.
Sometimes, you know, there's no quarter given on terms of what comes out and what gets said. So it's difficult because, you know, the ICC and the test countries, it's fair to say test cricket's struggling. So without trying to give that extra bit of relevance and keep it important and let everyone get a real flavour for what's happening out in the middle,
yeah,
it can be a bit fast. I don't know where the balance is about what you can do and what you can't do.
You give the viewer the option. It's like the red button.
Or a delay on it.
Oh, yeah, you delay it and you bleep out certain things.
Exactly.
Like the show.
Yes, yeah.
You put, yeah. What
Chris McCarthy's bleeped out the whole show. I don't know if he knows that.
What would you delay it, though? That means that you're not getting a true representation of the live action. out on the field. True. But I think the option is you just give the punter.
It would be the same as F1 radio, wouldn't it? That's delayed. And that's teams can request that that radio message isn't broadcast.
Okay,
so do it in a way like that.
What the players are arguing about, the Australians in particular, is that the stump mics are turned up when the bowler comes into bowl, when he delivers the ball. So if there's any noise, if there's a nick, if there's a controversial or a critical moment, it's captured. But come back to that, because I think we have action over at in Burnley.
We certainly do. We have a goal at Turf Moor. It's Burnley against Everton. Tommy is keeping an eye on this one for us.
Absolutely, yeah. As you say, Chris McCarty, Everton have taken the lead, and it's Burnley, to be honest, in the first 20 minutes of this game who have seen much of the ball, much more so than Everton. But Everton have had a couple of chances, one around about 7 minutes ago, which was fantastic in the box. Great footwork for Sigurdsson in the box. Put it square to Walcott, who from close range put it over the bar. It was a begging chance, but this time around, no mistake from Everton. It's in the back of the net. It's Everton 1 away at Turf Moor, at Burnley 0. It's Tosin who's got the goal, and I have to say, Burnley, who haven't won in 11 Premier League games, now have work to do. Of course, they won at Goodison Park in October against Everton. They're looking to do the double against Everton in the same season since they won the league back in 1959.
That is a 1960. Start for you. That is a stat, Tommy B. It is Cenk Tosun with a goal, his first goal following that £27 million move from Besiktas in January. Theo Walcott, brilliant work from him down the right. I think, though, the assist will go to Seamus Coleman. I think it was he that got a little flick, and it was a bullet header from Cenk Tosun. So Burnley 0, Everton 1. Given a start by Sam Allardyce today, there has been some suggestion that he struggled with the training regime of Sam Allardyce, but the Turk is on the score sheet. Burnley 0, Everton 1. That has put the cat amongst the pigeons. So it has. When we come back, we'll continue to keep an eye on that one. Conscious as well, we've got to discuss England, New Zealand, the third ODI. That wrapped up a little earlier today. We'll do that. Interestingly as well, if you've got a suggestion, if you've got an idea, an opinion on the old mic, the stump mic, let us know on 4001, because I think I'm a fan of it. I just think that the viewer needs to be given an option whether they listen to it or not, like the red button.
As we're saying, most of the banter between the fielding team and the batsman happens between deliveries when the ball's been getting passed back to the bowler. That's what the Aussies have asked for the mic to be turned down, so it doesn't capture during the delivery and anything that's critical in terms of watching and umpiring the match. The Aussies have just said, look, we'd like it turned down so we can get on with our full aggressive tactics behind there. But look, you can debate it, and there's probably neither a right or wrong answer to it. It's just the way cricket has been played, and now this technology has magnified the situation.
I like it. I think the more you can experience the live element of sport when you're watching on a television is fantastic.
I'm with you on that, Tommy. I really am. Let us know your thoughts on 4001. More chat when we come back.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
Approaching 5 to 5 on your Saturday afternoon. Keep your thoughts coming into us on 4001. We will be down to the Aviation Stadium, the Aviation Club, in about 30 minutes or so. Robbie Greenfield will be building up towards our big final this evening. It's the men's final of the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship. It's the Frenchman Lucas Pouille, the number 2 seed, taking on the number 3 seed Roberto Bautista Agut. Tom Bushell has been living down there essentially over the past weekend. You were on air yesterday, I think, Tom, for 6 hours, the fairy tale.
Six and a half hours.
You can bill me for that.
You'll get my invoice.
Hour. Yeah, I thought that would be the case. But Malik Jaziri, the little dream run for him came to an end.
It did, yeah. And to be fair to him, he gave it a real fight as well. In the first set, Bautista Agut, really, his experience and his talent really sort of showed. But in the second set, Jaziri, I think in all tennis matches, each player does get their chance to have their momentum. And Jaziri really did get some momentum in that second set as well, and managed to get to a 4-1 lead. And you can imagine the crowd, of course, a big Arab player, Tunisian number one, and the crowd were behind him, and it felt like the momentum was with him, and all he had to do really was see out the set. He was a break up, and he'd be level in the match, and it would be all to play for in that third and deciding set. But Bautista Agut found an opening and broke back, and then went on to win 4 games in a row to take that second set 6-4. It was interesting how it finished, actually, because it was a Bautista Agut serve, and Jaziri wanted to challenge it, but there was no call made, and I believe Jaziri had run out of challenges. So a little sad way to end the week that he's had, because it's been outstanding for him, and of course he would have enjoyed, I'm sure, once the disappointment of last night goes away, he'll look back on this week in Dubai with real pleasure, because he put himself forward so well. But not not to be in the end. And you know, we have a final where the top two seeds after Dimitrov left the tournament after losing to Jaziri in the first round, the top two seeds after that are playing it out later on tonight, and it'll be a stunning final. For me, Lucas Bouy, I think, will nick it. He's been in good form. He was in the final with Marseille last week, lost in that final, but a second final in consecutive weeks, I think, this time around, he'll get the win and lift Absolutely. The title. A new name, whatever happens, on the trophy in Dubai, which is always good to see.
Yeah, I'm with you. Lucas Bouy has looked good all fortnight, so he is. He is the highest ranked Frenchman. We were discussing that on yesterday's show. He's up to number world 15, is Lucas Bouy, taking on a man that also reached the final of the Mubadala World Tennis Championship the back end of 2017 in the shape of Roberto Bautista Agut. So that's the final from 7 p.m. Make sure to keep it locked on Dubai 103.8. Robbie Greenfield, Paul Espy will be calling all of the action. They'll also be keeping an eye on the 7 p.m. kickoffs in the English Premier League, so you won't miss a goal if you stick with us this evening. We're going to just return to cricket very quickly if we can, because we were discussing Australia-South Africa. That match ongoing, third day of the first test down in Durban. The third ODI between New Zealand and England is wrapped up, Archie, and you must not be a happy chappy.
No, well, it was a good match. Good match. Cricket was the winner, I must say, but England with a winner on the field, and very closely fought match, and it's been a very closely fought, well-balanced series between England and New Zealand. The series going into this third ODI was tied at one apiece. New Zealand won the first ODI. England won the second one during the week up in Napier. But it was England who batted first and scored 234 on their 50 overs. Captain Owen Morgan, top score with 48. It was a difficult wicket at the Basin Reserve, usually a high-scoring ground. It's not massive boundaries like many of New Zealand pitches. So England battled their way through to 234, and the Black Caps fell four runs short, despite a fine, classy century from Captain Kane Williamson. 112 not out he ended, but he just couldn't quite get the job done in the final two deliveries, and they fell four short. So New Zealand ended 230 for eight. So England won the match by four runs. They lead the five-match series 2-1. The fourth ODI is down in Dunedin on Tuesday. So a good win in a low-scoring match by England in the third ODI. They lead the series 2-1.
Keep your texts coming in. An awful lot of you getting in touch with us this afternoon, which is nice to see. 4001, keep them coming. I thought this one would get an awful lot of attention. The stump mic, because Irfan's been in touch to say, stump mic, bang on. What are the Australians trying to hide? That is a fair point, and that leads to sledging, of course, and you've already said off-air, don't say it on-air, Arch, the kind of things that those boys, I'm sure, will be saying. But either they talk within the limits of what they would do in front of their families, or be quiet. How can we allow them to behave what they wouldn't do in front of their families? And it's fair to say, Arch, that some of sledging does cross the line.
Yeah, I think we've seen with all sport, not just cricket, is that with the modern media coverage and the advent of social media, where things go live so quickly, get so viral, whether it be in a Premier League football match with a manager saying something on the sideline, with players on a rugby pitch, with all the referees mic'd up, because occasionally bad language will happen on a rugby pitch. Cricket in particular, it's been happening for years. And before stump mics, the referees were the sole adjudicator of what was right, what was wrong, and you know, the players used to have an open slant to be able to say whatever they wanted on the cricket field within reason. And I think what stump mics have done is brought it all into the living room of the viewing public, and it's a shame. But the Aussies want to be verbally aggressive. They sometimes want to cross the line and make it personal. And that's just the case of the game. But with this technology today, today's modern media doesn't allow that, really. So they've got to be their own adjudicators and manage what they say and how they say it within reason. So I guess that's where the balance is. And you don't want to take away from the aggression in sport. We all know that it's better when they are there. It just means that the bowlers, the captains, the wicket keepers, the slip cordon have just got to be a bit more respective, a bit more sort of
respectful
and careful with how they phrase their psychological disintegration, like Steve Waugh used to put it, of opposition.
Yeah, a lot of people getting in touch. Raj says, stump microphone is indeed great for the spectators. Amira, thank you very much for this lovely text. Amira says, loving the show this afternoon. I approve of the stump mic, but not between deliveries. Want to be surprised during my cricket. So an awful lot of people behind the stump mic. And you know, Tom, you've already alluded to the fact that you could take a leaf out of F1's book and just delay what it is that we hear between it.
But I think in F1 as well, they don't
the teams decide what radio broadcast can be broadcast.
Absolutely.
Now, if each cricket side said, okay, you can put that one out or whatever, then maybe that evens it up a little bit.
Or what we need to do, and again, this is another debate, another can of worms we're opening up. I know there's an awful lot of F1 fans that would love not to have control of the teams, not to have control over what is leaked out, and add to the viewer experience. How great would it be to hear the engineers talking to Hamilton, talking
Absolutely.
To Vettel?
Well, again, in terms of TV viewing and experiences, I'm sure this is something that we'll get to eventually, where you have multiple channels and you can choose which team you want to listen to for the entirety of the race, and you go, right, I want McLaren, and you basically hear the engineers talking to the drivers throughout.
I would
have that all day long.
It would be fantastic.
Just before we leave cricket, I want to give you an update from Sharjah. It's the 13th match of the Pakistan Super League. Quetta taking on Multan Sultans. Quetta have been dismissed for 102. They've only batted 15.4 of their 20 overs. They'll be disappointed with that effort. Quetta have been dismissed for 102. Multan Sultans will come to bat shortly.
102 all out, so they are. So it will be the Quetta Gladiators minus Kevin Peterson. I need to get the boys' thoughts on his announcement last week as well, or it's probably 10 days or so ago now, that he will retire, a little bit like Morney Morkel after the end of his little series against Australia. Kevin Peterson announcing that he too will retire after the conclusion of this Pakistan Super League. It is 5 o'clock. When we come back, we'll give you an update on the football. We're also going to be talking about Tom Bushell's second love. After football, it is all things sailing. Stay tuned.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.